A Cottage in the Woods by Fairy Queen 07, read by Rhea 314. There's a cottage, Styles's mother says, and then she presses a kiss to his forehead before turning off the light. It doesn't matter that he's past the age for bedtime stories, that most kids his age would push their mom away, reminding her that they're too old for that, they're not babies. Styles is different. And he's okay with that. Already his mind is fast at work, and he falls asleep to thoughts of overflowing gardens, birds bathing in a fountain, and a sense of home he doesn't completely understand. There's a cottage in the woods. She whispers the words into the dark of the room, one sentence that has Styles aching to beg her for more. They've done this before, and he knows that at the end she will have turned her story into a book. And it will go on her shelf with all the others. But there is a sense of urgency to this story, a nagging sensation that if they don't hurry, he'll never hear the end. He doesn't. But by the time he's able to take the book down, able to open it, and trace the handwritten words with his fingers, without having his chest go tight and lungs stutter stop, when he tries to draw a breath, he can finish it himself. He falls asleep imagining trees as tall as mountains, sunlight filtering through leaves, a fence tangled in ivy, reaching out to welcome visitors. There's a cottage in the woods, in the middle of a clearing. Styles waits until his mother's footsteps fade, then he's slipping out of bed. He crawls into his closet, pulls out the radio flashlight his dad gave him for his 11th birthday. He clicks it on and turns the volume down low, hangs it from the unused bar above him. Then he digs through the magazine clippings and photo printouts he's been collecting until he finds what he's looking for. He falls asleep in the closet, glossy cutout clutched tight to his chest. Tomorrow he will take it to school, ask the librarian if she can make it bigger, and scan a copy to his email. He'll print out copies when he gets home and start to build his cottage. There's a cottage in the woods, in the middle of a clearing. Around it is a fence. Her words are soft, but she isn't whispering. Styles can see the tears in his dad's eyes even from across the room, but he doesn't know what's wrong. He opens his mouth to ask, but his mom just kisses his forehead, tucks him in with hands shaking just enough for him to notice. He falls asleep to the sound of his dad crying, his, "Please, darling," and, "But think of Styles," muffled by the wall that separates their rooms. The cottage is a distant thing, dulled by the sadness lingering in the air. There's a cottage in the woods in the middle of a clearing. Around it is a fence, whitewashed and sun-faded. Styles expects the story to end there, but then she clears her throat and says, "There's a cottage in the woods in the middle of a clearing. Around it is a fence, whitewashed and sun-faded. At the gate is an arch, dripping with jasmine." She holds out her hand, and in the center is a small white blossom. Styles takes it with trembling fingers, holds the bud to his nose, and breathes in the scent. When he looks at his mother, she's leaning into his father's side, eyes closed and face pale. He thinks about her words, about how many there were tonight, and then he thinks about before. "Are you sick again?" he asks, afraid to reach out, to touch. His father sobs once, but his mother just smiles, presses soft lips to his forehead, and tells him it's time for bed. He falls asleep to the memory of white walls, machines beep, beep, beeping, and the nurses with their sad faces. The pictures of the cottage lie hidden in the shadows under his bed, a dying hope he'll pack away in the morning. There's a cottage in the woods in the middle of a clearing. Around it is a fence, whitewashed and sun-faded. At the gate is an arch dripping with jasmine. There's a fountain on the right, almost lost in the grass as tall as your hip. And to the left, flowers of every kind, growing in pots, hanging from baskets, and in the ground. There's, "Don't," Stiles pleads. He doesn't want her to do this anymore, doesn't want her to waste her precious breath on make-believe. His mother takes his hand in her own, her thumb strong despite the disease eating her away from the inside out. He knows now that very soon his mother will go to the hospital and that this time she won't be coming back. No one has said as much, but Stiles is smart. He knows how to look things up on the internet, and he knows that it's only been 2 years since the last time she was sick. 7 before that. He falls asleep to the sound of his mother's voice saying those same lines over and over. There's a cottage in the woods, in the middle of a clearing. Around it is a fence. There's a cottage in the woods, in the middle of a clearing. Around it is a fence, whitewashed and sun-faded. At the gate is an arch dripping with jasmine. There's a fountain on the right, almost lost in grass as tall as your hip, and to the left flowers of every kind, growing in pots, hanging from baskets, and in the ground. There's a bench beneath an old oak tree, but you never sit on it. You lay in the grass instead, the sky an open canvas above you. Sometimes you're alone. Sometimes he lies in the grass with you, lets you whisper the secrets of the earth in his ear. Who? Stiles demands. His dad is down the hall getting a cup of coffee, but the nurse is in the room. She's new, dark curly hair, eyes that shine with sympathy as she checks his mother's IV. The card clipped to her shirt says, Melissa McCall, and Stiles has her name in his head, memorizes. You'll see. His mother says it like a promise. Visiting hours are technically over, but none of the night staff have the heart to chase the father and son out. A cot is brought in, and after much heckling from Stiles, his dad stretches out, drifts off with his wife's hand clasped tight in his own. Stiles could move to the chair, but he doesn't. He lies down on the too small bed with his mother and listens to the faint beat of her heart. He falls asleep to the scent of roses clogging his nose. The room is full of them, and his last conscious thought is that he will never have those in his garden. Never. There's a cottage in the woods in the middle of a clearing. Around it is a fence, whitewashed and sun-faded. At the gate is an arch dripping with jasmine. There's a fountain on the right, almost lost in grass as tall as your hip. And to the left, flowers of every kind, growing in pots, hanging from baskets, and in the ground. There's a bench beneath an old oak tree, but you never sit on it. You lay in the grass instead, the sky an open canvas above you. Sometimes you're not alone. Sometimes he lies in the grass with you, lets you whisper the secrets of the earth in his ear. He laughs at your stories, not loud like your dad does, but quiet. Because he's not used to it even now. And when you're not alone, when the rest of your friends are with you, he will laugh with his eyes instead. Stiles nods and looks at the boy sitting beside him. His hair is like his mother's, though shorter, eyes dark and worried as he listens to the story. Clutched in one fist is his inhaler, and Stiles has taken an instant liking to him when one of the other nurses had introduced them earlier that afternoon. He falls asleep much later on, after Melissa McCall's son, Scott, Stiles thinks his name was, leaves. He dreams of cottages and flowers, of Scott standing beside him, asking in an odd voice, "But how did she know?" There's a cottage in the woods, in the middle of a clearing. Around it is a fence, whitewashed, and sun-faded. At the gate is an arch, dripping with jasmine. There's a fountain on the right, almost lost in grass as tall as your hip, and to the left, flowers of every kind, growing in pots, hanging from baskets, and in the ground. There's a bench beneath an old oak tree, but you never sit on it. You lay in the grass instead, the sky an open canvas above you. Sometimes you're not alone. Sometimes he lies on the grass with you, lets you whisper the secrets of the earth in his ear. He laughs. Her voice hitches twice, then she continues. He laughs at your stories, not loud like your dad does, but quiet, because he's not used to it even now. And when you're not alone, when the rest of your friends are with you, he will laugh with his eyes instead. Beneath the kitchen window is a rosemary bush, and beside it, basil and thyme. In the garden, in the back, are tomatoes and carrots and green beans, perfect for little fingers to pull out of the ground. In the front, there are forget-me-nots and daffodils, Gerber daisies and sunflowers, chrysanthemums, snapdragons, amaryllis, peonies, delphinium, and tulips. Her words are broken up, lost in the raspy breath she has to suck in just to speak. Styles listens with tears burning his cheeks and his dad's fingers curled tight over the sharp jut of Styles's shoulder. Scott slips out of the room, aware there will be no more story today. He's been spending almost every day for the past week with Styles and his mother. As he passes, he squeezes Styles' hand. Then it's just Styles and his dad, who is wearing the same clothes from 2 days ago. It says a lot that he won't leave the bedside even long enough to shower and change. His dad says, "Shh, just sleep, honey. You can finish the story tomorrow." And even though Styles wants to argue, he holds his tongue. He already knows he won't hear the end of this story. Knows that this is probably the last time she'll tell it. Even if his dad continues to pretend. He presses the button on the little recorder lying between them, watches the red light fade out, and thinks maybe it's a sign. He wrinkles his nose at the smell of roses already beginning to wilt around the edges. At her funeral there are roses, hundreds of roses, clogging up the air with their stench. They're all over the house and Styles hates them. The minute the last guest, mourner, has left, he takes them outside and dumps them in the green bin. He falls asleep in the chair beside the bed, his dad lying with his mom. When he wakes, he already knows. He doesn't try to hide his face as the tears start anew. There's a cottage in the woods, in the middle of a clearing. Around it is a fence, whitewashed and sun-faded. Styles whispers the words into the crisp spring air and he shivers. Out of the corner of his eye, he can see his dad do the same. He wonders if she knew somehow. Foresaw this very scene 11 years ago, when she first began telling him her last story. It wasn't unheard of, his mother having a sixth sense, a knowing, but it's never been quite like this. He feels the sting of tears on his cheeks, and he scrubs at them, laughs, breathless and sad, as he thinks of her whispering this story to him at night. Beside him, Derek and the others wait, silent, unobtrusive to this moment. Only Scott moves, breaking away from the pack to stand close to Styles. He rests his head on Styles' shoulder, takes some of the weight of pain and guilt. They stand in silence around a small cottage, with its whitewashed fence, its archway at the gate, the promise of an overflowing garden once Styles gets his fingers in the dirt and works his magic. "She would have loved this," he says at last. But how did she know?" Scott asks. No one asks who they're talking about. They know. They can feel his grief, raw even now. And they close in on Styles, offering him their love, their support. Not even the sheriff escapes the pack's group hug. He falls asleep under the oak tree, face turned up to the sky. The sun is warm on his skin where it slips between the wide green leaves. There's a cottage in the woods in the middle of a clearing. Around it is a fence, whitewashed and sun-faded. At the gate there's an arch dripping with jasmine. There's a fountain on the right, almost lost in grass as tall as a young man's hip, and to the left flowers of every kind, growing in pots, hanging from baskets, and in the ground. There's a bench beneath an old oak tree, but Styles never sits on it. He lies in the grass instead, the sky an open canvas above him. Sometimes he's not alone. Sometimes Derek lies on the grass with him, lets Styles whisper the secrets of the earth in his ear. He laughs at Styles' stories, not like your grandpa does, but quiet, because he's not used to it even now. And when they're not alone, when the rest of their friends are with them, Derek will laugh with his eyes instead. Beneath the kitchen window is a rosemary bush, and beside it basil and thyme. In the garden there are tomatoes and carrots and green beans perfect for little fingers to pull out of the ground.
Like mine, Daddy?
The little girl sitting in the grass next to Styles holds up her hands, proud and happy. Just like yours, Styles agrees. He tickles her palm, then turns the page. In the front, there are forget-me-nots and daffodils, Gerber daisies and sunflowers, chrysanthemums, snapdragons and amaryllis, peonies, delphinium and tulips. There is a flower for almost every letter of the alphabet, and tucked away in the corner, almost hidden in the shadows, is a rosebush. Of all the flowers, the roses have the softest touch. Velvet against Styles's fingers, the pink edges fading into white near the center. Of all the flowers in the garden, these are the ones Styles loves the most, and also the least.
Why, Daddy? They're so pretty.
His daughter's bright blue gaze, intelligent and inquisitive, goes from the rose bush a few feet away to Styles. And maybe they aren't connected by blood, but she's his daughter through and through. She squirms a little as she waits for him to answer, her soft, pale curls bounce, drawing the attention of the puppy in her lap, and Styles thinks she is the best thing to have fallen into their lives. Because they were your grandmother's favorite flowers, and every time your daddy smells them, it makes him remember how sick she was, how much it hurt to lose her. Oh. She looks down at the puppy, her hand gentle as it strokes over his fluffy ears. Does it make Daddy sad when he says my name? Because it's the same as Grandma's name?
No, sweetheart, Styles replies, and he means it. From where he's lying on the bench with their son, Derek turns, catches Styles' gaze. There's nothing there but love, fierce and terrifying, and he smiles. Styles lies back in the grass, the sound of children's laughter sweeping away the last of his sorrow. He can hear his father in the kitchen, opening the fridge to pull out lunch makings, can hear the sound of Scott's car as it turns down the road leading to their cottage, past the place where Derek's family home once stood. When he closes his eyes, he can feel the hum of life in the earth beneath him, can taste the storm that is still 2 days away. He falls asleep in the garden, one arm draped over his eyes to block out the sun, his fingers brushing over Derek's mark. He doesn't regret his decision, and he thinks, just before he drifts off, that his mother would be happy for him, too. There's a fairy ring deep in the woods, where no one dares to venture save for a woman with a dream, Styles says. He presses a kiss to each child's head. There's four of them now, and how did that happen, he would like to know. Tucks the covers in around them and slips from the room. They're catching on, learning not to break the spell woven by each new segment of the story. In the bedroom, Styles reaches for the unbound pages, the pen he keeps beside it, and adds the newest part. Derek watches him, silent, wondering. They fall asleep, and when he dreams, Styles dreams of all the stories he has yet to tell his kids. The end. If you've enjoyed this story, please leave feedback to the author. You can do that at a link to the text through this story's post. Thanks for listening.